Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Hello, I am so excited to be here today, and we're going to hop right into it. So my guest today is truly the definition of a badass woman. And I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to breadcrumb you a little bit about how I found her. So I had just done, most of you know, I did a TED Talk in October. And if you haven't seen it, go to my website or go to my YouTube channel and watch it. It's called The Secret to Finding Lasting Love. And in doing that, probably the first or second day that I was watching my TED Talk, you'll see other talks come up. And it's like other talks you might be interested in. And there was this interesting talk given by a person named Ashley. And I went on to it, and I don't know why I felt called to click. And I clicked on it. And to tell you, I was gripped and riveted. It was like 11 p.m., you guys. And I went into fight or flight listening to her TED Talk for like 10 minutes. I was like full of cortisol, full of adrenaline. And I was like, I need to tell this person how amazing her TED Talk was. So I found her, wrote a note on her website, and got an incredibly kind note back like 5 seconds later from her. And I want to tell you, I have with me today, Ashley Stahl. Ashley, we are so happy to have you here.
Thank you for having me. What an intro. I need you in my pocket. Like, what a self-esteem boost.
Oh my God. Well, I'm going to read you guys Ashley's bio. Okay. So just wait, because all I said was she was a badass and she gave a TEDx talk. Let me do her a little justice. She is a counterterrorism professional turned career coach and best-selling author of the book, U-Turn, Get Unstuck, Discover Your Direction, Design Your Dream Career. And she helps people to get into careers that you love and that you're aligned with. She's given 2 viral TEDx talk, case in point, found her through her TED Talk. She's got online courses. She's got an email list of 50 gajillion people on Pluto, Jupiter, and planet Earth. She's got a podcast that I've been on twice. And she writes for Forbes. She's been all over in the media, like the Wall Street Journal. So I present to you this badass firecracker, amazing human being that I have grown greatly attached to in the last 2 months, Ashley Stahl. So I love you.
I love you back. Thank you for having me. This is so much fun.
Oh my God. I mean, Ash, tell us about you, just your story and how you U-turned into U-turn and what you do now. I mean, my listener is amazing, maybe single, can live anywhere on earth, and is looking for passion and purpose in their lives overall, including finding the lid to their pot. So tell us you.
I love that expression, every pot has a lid. It's the best. And I think that's definitely, I think there's a lot of parallels between your career and your love life. Like dating is very much like job hunting and searching for the right fit. But for me, I think like most people, I grew up with those ideas that you should follow your passion or that you should do what you love and the money is going to follow. And I remember making myself crazy with those expressions, feeling more lost than ever. And in college, I went to the career services office and I remember, you know, asking her, what should I major in? And she said to me, you know, do what you love and all of those things again. And then I just majored in 3 things, government, history, and French, not because I'm an overachiever, but because I was lost and just needed options. And, you know, fast forward, there's so many reasons that took me into counterterrorism, but mostly it was that I grew up in the wake of 9/11 that, you know, I think 9/11 impacted the millennial generation in a similar way that the pandemic has hit Generation Z. It's at that critical point in their career growth. And, you know, my argument in all of my work is don't do what you love. Don't follow your passion. Instead, do what you are. Mm. And I think there's power in this, not just in your career, but in your love life, because, you know, people, and I'm really someone that has done this where, you know, I have a really fun dad, and he used to praise me as a kid for being really sharp, really quick, really funny. And so I learned at a young age to perform, especially when they had dinner parties. Like, I had a persona, and it wasn't that it was totally inauthentic, but I could butter it up and put it on and be funny and be entertaining. And it wasn't until later in my love life that I realized, like, wow, I don't want to be this entertaining version of me. I want to be me. I want my nervous system to be at zero. I want to be calm when I'm with someone, not holding the responsibility of performing so that their time with me is interesting. And it took so much self-discovery and so many layers to get back into the heart of who I am and carry that not just into my career and my love life, but everywhere that I go and in my work in so many ways. And so since, I would say, 2010, I graduated grad school. I gave everything to working in national security. I've had a protector living inside of me my whole life. Like, I had a little brother who, he's so sharp. And when we were kids, he was a slower learner than I was. And I was so protective of him. Mm-hmm. And I think this protectiveness just kind of channeled itself into the government. I thought that's the highest way that I could protect people. And, you know, watching 9/11 happen on the East Coast, having family on the East Coast, it just felt like the thing to do. And I put all of myself into it. I learned languages, French, Arabic, Dari. I got the best degree I could. And eventually I landed at the Pentagon. And it was very soon into the Pentagon that I was like, wait a minute, this isn't for me. I'm way too sensitive for this. And how did I not notice that? And the issue was really a matter of core values and realizing that just because I'm interested in something doesn't mean I'm meant to be producing that thing. Just because I happily consume politics or fashion doesn't mean I'm meant to produce politics by being a politician or produce fashion by being a designer. There's a big difference between having an interest in something and upgrading it into an actual career path. How you use your mind, your body, your heart, and your energy throughout the day is very different from what you're interested in sometimes. You know, I just can't say it enough. It's like, I love reality TV, but it would be the worst thing for me to be on a reality TV show. So the point being that my healing in my career is very much so a form of healing, I think, in all facets of my life, including my love life, because I was able to say, okay, what are my core values actually? And I think one thing people don't do in their career or in love is define their values. Like, I'm sure with some of your clients, you see people say like, oh, they value religion or spirituality, and so do I. But if to that person, religion means going to church every week, and to you, it just means like having positive thoughts or being a moral person, it's very different. So, you know, I had a client who told me that adventure for them meant trying new restaurants in Miami. And then another client, adventure was skydiving. So, you know, like defining your values, really understanding how they show up in your life matters just as much, I think, in your career as it does in your love life. And so that has become one of the many facets that I've discovered over time. So eventually I got the courage to leave the Pentagon after, you know, putting all this time in. And I know a lot of people buy into the myth that because they put a ton of time into something, they can't leave, they can't change it, they can't take a step back. Yeah. And, you know, whether you're in a relationship or a career that's not working for you, backing up does not have to mean backing down. There are so many things that we are taught in society that if we're doing this thing, we're moving forward. But the truth of the matter is, if you're not aligned with who you truly are, you're moving backwards. And eventually who you are is going to win. Who you are is going to shine through. Who you are is going to demand to be seen. And you're not going to have any choice but to unravel where you are so that you can restart and be who you are, or where you are so that you could restart and be who you truly are.
Did you have a moment when you were sitting at the Pentagon where you were like, yeah, I think life is full of inflection points, right? And there's always that point like where change happens in an instant.
Yeah.
And what was that point for you? Because I think I want to unpack so much of what you said, right? You have to be who you are. Just because you're interested in something or good at something doesn't mean that is who you are. So what was that moment for you? And then how did you get to where you are now? You know, kind of inspire us, because I think who doesn't want to be who they are and take that burden off of do what you love and success will come. Find what you're passionate about and then start a business around that. People, you're right. It's concrete blocks on our shoulders.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, well, first of all, the big limit, and there's so many parallels between, I mean, the amount of times on my podcast or my book I reference dating and in alignment with job hunting is just insane. But, you know, I think the thing that's so interesting is that people put this pressure on themselves to have the answers in the first shot or the first try, and it's just not real. Yeah. If you ask any successful entrepreneur, you know, how they found their path, usually there's a lot of failure on the same block as all of their success. And this rigidity and unwillingness to be experimental, to pay what I would call the cost of admission to a fulfilling career, a fulfilling love life, I think is translating into a lot of poor choices. So for example, you know, I think what we're doing in our careers is almost like the social equivalent in our love lives to saying, the first person you like in preschool, marry them, like do it and grow it. So I think it's just really important to be able to say, is that true? How are you going about your career? What mindset are you holding about it and in your love life? Because to me, life is an experiment. Life is a numbers game. And when you, and dating is just sifting, right? Like you're sifting through the options. So to me, so is your career. And if you want to be powerful, to me, that doesn't mean that you just go into limbo. What it means is you show up, you try something on, you see what feedback the universe gives you, and you course correct along the way. And I think where people are getting stuck in love or career is they're saying, I want this to be right, and so I'm going to make it be right, without accepting that eventually they're going to have to rip that Band-Aid. That is not a sustainable plan.
Exactly. And it comes back to dating, right? And it's that risk aversion, and it right. And we don't, to your point, want to experiment with looking at other things, other jobs in the dating world. It's you don't want to look at other people. And then what happens? We fall out of alignment with what we actually want. We ignore red flags in situations because now we have one option because we're not confident enough to say, well, I can do a couple of these things at the same time. And that's where we get stuck in bad situations, bad jobs, bad relationships again and again and again. So it's changing your mindset around this, which is what I love. You can take chances, guys. You can experiment. Look at finding the job that you love, the career that you love, the person that you love. You're going to have to go through iterations and take chances and not say, well, I'd want the third person I date to become my husband. It's not going to happen.
Exactly. And you know, in the same way, like I've made the choice to live vulnerably. So if you read my book or you listen to my podcast or anything, I try to be pretty vulnerable and honest in service to people and myself for my own sanity, just being open and real. But I feel like we aren't allowing ourselves to be honest with ourselves. And so one of my favorite questions that I ask in my TED talk and I ask clients all the time is, what do you know that you wish you didn't? What do you know that you wish wasn't true? And then most people are going to say something about their career, about their partner, about their lives, that if they really look at it, it's threatening. It can feel threatening because they have to change it if they want to take responsibility in their lives. And most of the time, we're not actually stuck. It's just our thinking that's stuck. We think we're stuck somewhere when we're not. We can choose to change it. And so when it comes to core values, for example, you asked me when I knew that I wanted to leave the Pentagon. I remember I worked on military bases. I was traveling between Washington, D.C. and Indiana. I was asked to travel to 18 countries that were really high risk, and I quit my job because of it. So that was one of the moments that I truly quit. But another moment that I knew I needed to quit was, and this is so weird for me to admit, but somebody handed me their gun. And I'd never held a gun before. And I remember thinking, like, who am I to think I'm supposed to work in national security and that I'm scared to hold a gun? And this person just needed to go use the restroom. Can you hold this really quick? And I just remember feeling like death in my hands and terrified and thinking to myself, like, I'm just not cut out for this. And, you know, obviously anybody listening could say to themselves, like, how do you not know that? Like, what a weird millennial thought to be like, I want to work in security, but I'm scared of guns. I didn't know that about myself. I'm just experimenting with my life and I'm courageous enough to do that. There's a big difference between being afraid and being courageous. And, you know, we've been taught that doubt means don't. But for me, I never put those two together. For me, fear just means you're on an edge for yourself and to keep going a lot of the time. Sometimes there's a very real mechanism of fear that, you know, is ingrained in us from seeing a saber-toothed tiger and needing to dodge it. But I think for me, just realizing like I'm going to practice courage, or as Dan Sullivan says, fear is wetting your pants and courage is doing what you're supposed to do with wet pants. And so for me, I quit the Pentagon with wet pants. I just was like, all right, I have to go. I don't know who I am right now, but I'm committed to finding out. It's a way of life. I am willing to put years in to my own sanity, to my own being. I'm willing to follow the nudges. I'm willing to check things out that make me curious. Right now, I live in New York. I've lived in Los Angeles. I've lived in Paris. I've lived in Washington, D.C. I've lived in London. Yes, that comes across probably as privilege. The truth of the matter is I lived with someone in Washington, D.C., and I was sharing a bedroom and barely scraping to get by when I was starting my job hunt. But my point is, I'm willing to try things on and inconvenience myself for the sake of finding me. And, you know, there's a lot of questions in the self-help world of, do you ever get there in your career, in your relationship with yourself, wherever there means for you? And I think you do, but you need to be willing to experiment to figure out what that even means for you.
100%. And there, like you said, you're going to course correct. What you think there is supposed to be is going to be very different than what there ends up being or is, because you're experimenting and you're going to find out. You're going to hold the gun in your hand and go, oh shit, I don't want death in my hands, right? How could you have known that, yeah, right? But then you knew that and you course corrected. You had a choice. We all have a choice. Every day we make thousands of little decisions that determine where we get to in our life. Now, you talk about values, right? And I think especially for people, you know, maybe people that are older than 40 or 50 or 60 that might be listening to this, or heck, if you're in your 20s or 30s, how do you sit down? How do you know what you value? Can you tell us, like, well, how did you come to your own process? Like, these are my values. We talk about core values all the time. Are those I value? Honesty, I value integrity, or is it something else? Tell us. Yeah.
To me, the definition of a core value is it's a non-negotiable principle by which you live your life.
Okay.
And okay. You can value a lot of things, but for them to be a core value, they need to be evident in your day-to-day being, and something that people would probably be able to easily notice or comment on about you. So my values are connection, fun, freedom, inspiration. And you see it everywhere. Like, people who know me would be able to guess that. I love fun and I'm looking for it. I'm not a workaholic. Like, there's so many different ways of my being. And the problem, I think, with core values that people have is that far too often they're too aspirational. They pick words that they want more of in their life, which, by the way, is really valuable to know, versus words that really represent who they are. And so I think what's important here is to be able to say, you know, if you pick the word peace, ask yourself, are you peaceful? How does peace manifest in your day-to-day being? How are you showing up in peace? How are you demonstrating peace? And if it's hard for you to answer it, it's probably not a core value. It's something that you're aspiring to, which is great to know. And then let's get back to your core values. Because to me, when you know those top five, I would say, core values that you have, those top five key ingredients to how you show up in the world, you can use them as a filter in your career. And probably I would defer to you in your love life, because you're able to say, And to me, the fastest way to be unhappy in your career or love life probably would be to have one of your core values violated. So let's say a core value for you is integrity, and it's showing up everywhere in how you are in the world, who you are in the world. I used to work in the government, and I worked at the Pentagon, like the cornerstone allegedly of justice. So, you know, maybe it wouldn't be weird for me to say justice is a core value of mine, right? So it's interesting because there are jobs where maybe the person loves what they do, loves the people they work with, but they're selling something that they don't believe in, and integrity is a value for them. That would mean that their career is infringing on these principles that are so at the helm of who they are. And I think there's probably something to that with your love life. Like, if you value something so deeply, like, for example, I had a partner, I value inspiration a lot. And I have a playlist on Spotify called The Writer Mix. For those of you who need a focus playlist under my name, I wrote my entire book to The Writer Mix that I have. And it was so important for me to focus. Like, I would put it on and it was almost like I trained my brain to know it was writing. Yeah,
time. It was writing time.
It was writing time. And the music moved me so much. And I remember my partner at the time, he hated the mix, and he would be like, "Oh, there's like a pit in my stomach every time you play this." And I remember having to sit him down and be like, "You don't understand. This mix is like what gets me inspired. And like, inspiration is so important to me. And it helps me work and I can think. And it's so much more than a music mix to me." And every time he would say that, it was a trespassing on something so much deeper. It was a core value for me. It was my inspiration every day. It was part of my inspiration. So I think it's these little things where, you know, like, you'll see a couple fighting about the color of the paint on the wall. They're painting their new house. It's not about the paint, right? Like, maybe somebody values something beneath that and at their core. And so I think it's mostly important in your career to say, what are my top five? How do I ask questions through the lens of those so that I can figure out if something is a yes or a no for me? And how do I make sure in my personal life that I have people in my life that support and nurture these parts of me that are at my core?
That's right. I love that, how you said fun and connection, and you're perfectly, like, you have picked a career that allows for all of that, whereas you hadn't before. So I think this is such a great conversation. Your core values are who you are and how you're living your life now. They're not aspirational.
Right. Exactly. And that is the biggest thing that people are missing. And that's something that in my body of work has been really a clear teaching, because I find there's a lot of talk on the internet about core values and in the coaching space. And I think it's great, but I found that there's no one saying, like, there's a difference between an aspiration and a value. And to me, that distinction is so core to being able to choose those words. And as part of my body of work of don't just do what you love, do what you are. Another message I have is around how you're spending your time. So in your career, you know, it's tough to push a river. So people aren't going to enjoy their work if they're trying to be someone they're not. They're not going to enjoy their relationship if they have to keep up a persona or a way of being that isn't really theirs. And so to me, knowing where you're gifted is the juice of a good career. I've found that there are 10 core skill sets that, you know, after serving my email list and just coaching people the past decade and my programs online, there seems to be 10 kind of categories of skill that people fall into, whether they own a business or they're in the workforce. And I could go through them if it's helpful. And that to me is at the crux of who they are. That's how you want to be using your mind, your body, your hands, your energy throughout the day.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Go through them. Whip through them. I want to hear.
Let's do it. So number one is innovation. So that is the creative self-starter. It's the intrapreneur or the entrepreneur. One thing that is key to know is whether you're supposed to be an intrapreneur or an entrepreneur. An intrapreneur is the highly creative problem solver within a company, with they have their own book of business under the umbrella of a brand, right? Like an insurance person or real estate. Or they're the second in command at a company. The entrepreneur obviously is the person that problem solves and is visionary in the market. Usually I've found that people are meant to be one or the other as a result of their relationship with flexibility and freedom and also financial security. So the entrepreneur needs absolute freedom. That means they need freedom on what idea they work on. It needs to be their idea. the time and the schedule that they work on it, how it's going to look. Usually the intrapreneur can execute on a concept. It's not their idea, but they're highly intrapreneurial. So they have all these amazing ways that they're going to bring it to life. And they're usually okay getting some instruction, but they want some autonomy in being able to bring it to life. The entrepreneur, it's like, leave them alone. They have their vision. It needs to be done. And it's not that they're difficult to work with. They're just a visionary and that's who they are. Also financial security. You know, the entrepreneur feels more pain if they don't do their thing versus the intrapreneur usually appreciates that predictability of their finances more than they need that all-out freedom in the marketplace. Most of the time, intrapreneurs just need flexibility and they want that financial security. And then there's the second core skill set, and none of these are in a particular order, which is building. So this can be a management consultant. They have a mindset of building, or it could be more tactical, like a construction worker building with their hands. It's about the energy and the skill of building. It could be literal. It could be mental. I keep it open on purpose because I think that these are different hats that people can wear differently. And then the third one is words. This is my core skill set, probably yours too. And one of the keys when it comes to these skills is understanding, are you introverted or are you extroverted? And I know there's a lot of research on being an ambivert, but why this matters is because the internal, if you're introverted, you're going to express words, if that's your skill set, more internally. That's going to look like a writer. That's going to look like you behind your computer a little bit more. If you're an extrovert, the way you use words could be very external. That could be an agent. That could be a sales rep. That could be a speaker, motivational speaker. There's so many different ways it can look. Number four is motion. This is the person who's physically in motion or on their feet. Believe it or not, that's a skill.
That's amazing.
Those are the people who are, they could be a tour guide. They could be a fitness trainer. They thrive being on their feet. Number five is service. So this is the humanitarian, the helper. This one, it's important to ask yourself along with all of them, you know, where is this skill coming from? Is it from a wound or is it from inspiration? What I mean is, are you a service person or did you just learn to be a people pleaser at a young age? And then there's number six, which is coordination. God bless the coordinators. You need them. I need them. These are the detail-oriented, cross the T, dot the I, project management, operations, get it done, sort of people, events, you know, all of the different skills that I really just don't have are the coordinators. I'm always hiring coordinators because I'm like, oh, thank God for you. Shout out to Kirsten. If you're listening to this, thank you for
being. We love you, Kirsten.
Yeah. And then number seven is analysis. So this can be the economist, the academic, the researcher, highly analytical mind. And number eight is the numbers person. Number crunching, bookkeeper, investment banker, spreadsheets, God bless their souls. Again, another skill I don't have. Number nine is tech. This could be IT support. This could be artificial intelligence creators. And then number 10 is beauty. This could be musicians. This could be makeup artists. This could be actors. It just depends on
designers, interior designers.
Exactly. Yeah. This is the people who are making art of the world around them in some way. So those are the 10. Obviously, every now and again, I'll come across someone that maybe doesn't fall under that. Most people will resonate with two or three of these skill sets, but it's important to know which one you lead with.
Yeah, no, that's so key. And I love that you shared those with us. And, you know, as Ashley, I know you and I have talked about your dating life and your relationship life, and you're a highly eligible single woman living in New York and dating all over. If you had to think about your values, right? Mm-hmm. Connection, fun. How do you translate your values into the dating world? Is that something that you've been evaluating potential dates by as well? Or do you have a different set of relationship values?
Yeah, I think one of the values that I've had a misunderstanding around that got me stuck in relationships was around connection. So I love connection. And I used to tell myself like, oh, we have a connection if I felt chemistry and a sense of humor with someone. But what was missing for me is to be deeply understood. And it takes time for me to feel like somebody deeply understands me. And so for me, connection, often was missing if I was with somebody for a while and we laughed a lot and we could have fun doing the same things or we were interested in the same things, but they couldn't really get to know that deeper way of how I think, who I am. And so that's been a standard that I'm holding a lot more highly. And I've also learned a lot about how my core values need to show up for me to be happy. So for example, just because I value fun, it doesn't necessarily mean that the other person has to bring the fun. It just needs to be that they're down for fun in what fun looks like for me. So for me, fun looks like new experiences, being out and about, trying new things. As long as they're down for that, obviously it's a bonus if they create the fun for me. I've had partners that do that and that's amazing. Or other self-expression. So I need to feel emotionally safe. I need to feel like I can be who I am. I can share what I think or what I feel. I want to feel seen. You know, I had a partner who was very resistant to reading my book because they didn't like reading. And then I had someone who read my book twice before our first date. So I feel like I don't need someone, you know, reading my work or anything like that to date me, but the place he was coming from of genuinely wanting to know more about me, was really heartwarming. And so I think that made me feel self-expressed with the person. Like they saw me through that book and they want to connect more. And so I think these are different ways. And so for anyone listening, I would encourage you to say, what are your values? Which ones are you being a little too aspirational with that you can delete from the list? And how do you want those to show up in your love life? And how do you need them to? Because there's a big difference between a need and a want. For example, my best friend the other day, I once dated an art collector and I loved the fun part of me, loved that he would take me all these places that had in the self-expression part of me, he would take me to art openings and galleries and I was exposed to a world that I didn't really know. And I'm usually the one kind of bringing someone around saying, come see this fun thing that I like. And so it was really fun to be with somebody who brought the fun. And then I started dating someone who was just really easygoing, totally down for things, but they didn't really bring that fun. They were just kind and sweet and great. And my best friend was like, but what about she calls it expansiveness, which is what I call it too. You know, like he doesn't sound like he brings you that expansiveness. And don't you need that? I said, no, I want that. I would prefer somebody to bring expansiveness. I need them to not prevent me from being that way. So as long as they're down to come along, I'm good.
And you bring up a great point because it's just because somebody could be different than you and maybe not expansive in the same way. I don't think this conversation about knowing who we are and knowing what we value means that we're looking for mirror images of ourselves, because that isn't, it's not what most people want or need. So if someone isn't as expansively thinking as you are, maybe they're not as well traveled as you are or I am or whomever. But the question that I have my clients ask themselves is, would they be willing to?
Yeah.
Right. Because sometimes we are who we are because of a set of circumstances, but that doesn't mean that we're stuck in that place. What is our capacity to grow and to change and to want new experiences? Right. So for someone that could become more expansive, that's what you want.
Yeah.
Or is expansive in a different way. I had a client who is now happily married. She was 34 when she started with me. She's a publicist. And she said, you know, I'm this highly cerebral, alpha, you know, successful woman. And I want a guy that reads, you know, Sunday morning, it's brunch, reads the New York Times cover to cover, does the crossword puzzle, right? And dated scads of those guys. And every single one of them, nobody ended up sticking. Tons of them ended up having red flags. She says, well, I just want him to be smart. I said, but intelligence can show up in different ways.
Right.
She ended up marrying somebody who not only had his own job in the corporate world, but also had a side hustle in real estate, could care less about reading the New York Times. And I, as her dating coach, said, have brunch with your friends and do the crossword puzzles together in the New York Times. If he doesn't do that, that's fine. But he is smart and worldly in his way, and he's so good to you. So stop thinking you need this mirror image of yourself and look at the fact that he is worldly. He is intelligent, just in a different way. And they couldn't be happier together. And they have this yin-yang energy, which is amazing.
I love that. And you brought up a really good point that I think crosses over also with career and love, which is masculine versus feminine energy. And I think the trademark of an evolved soul is someone who can walk through both energies effectively when they're needed. But what I get curious about is in love, especially with women like what you just described, you know, I'm a hardworking woman. How do you think we should be turning it off in our love life, that masculine energy are shifting? Because for me, it has been a constant practice in my career. And I get asked as a career coach by women all the time, how do I shift from the workday into my household?
Yeah. And I think, and I get this question all the time with our clients, like, how do I, you know, do I go straight from, you know, work to my date? I'm like, you have to come home and wash the stench of work off of you. You've got to have a dating routine. Like I have them, they have their dating playlist. They have their go-to outfits, right? It's building these atomic habits. Then, like you were saying with your writer's playlist, as soon as you hear it, it's Pavlovian. And you're like, I should be writing right now. So as soon as I put on my berry lip and I curl my hair and I put on my cute wrap dress or pencil skirt or skinny jeans or whatever their go-to outfits are in that playlist, and they're sipping their Prosecco. Okay. Now they're like, I'm in dating mode. And bringing yourself out of, you know, criminal defense attorney mode into just being Ashley, the cool girl. It's like, who are you when you're with your best friends, when you're having a glass of wine, when your feet are kicked up? Who is that girl? And you want to have a dating ritual that's going to bring that facet of you out. I tell women, especially men, you too, but we're like diamonds. Diamonds have facets all over it. And at different parts of the day, different parts of our lives, we have a different facet that faces forward. And so for dates, the facet, it's like you want to turn your diamond and bring out the fun, cool girl that you are when you're with your inner village. And so often we want to lead with our corporate facet, with our masculine facet, because again, it's Pavlovian. We do that at work. We get promoted. We get more money. We get more respect. Lather, rinse, repeat. Do it again and again. And we think that because that success breeds success, that's the persona that you are. But don't forget, you're a diamond. You can spin that facet around and be the girl that you are. And I work with C-suite people, entrepreneurs, high voltage people, that we have these conversations all the time. That's who you are in this facet of your life. But who are you? And most of us are, you know, we're kind, warm, smart people that just want to meet a good person and want to be accepted for who we are.
Yeah.
Without that work costume on, like, who am I really? Mm-hmm. And I want you to love that part of me.
Exactly. I'm so glad I asked you about this on this conversation, because giving all of this career insight, I think there is a masculinity to the tips and the tactics and the go-tos and the, and I think there's something so important about being able to be not just in your love life, but in your career. I think that sometimes when you're so masculine, you're forcing things, you're pushing things, and you often will get results you don't actually want anyway. And so to me, a good question in my career that I ask sometimes is, what's wanting to happen? And I answer that based on what feedback I'm getting from people around me. Like, I remember when I started my coaching business 10 years, 12 years ago, people were like, are you hosting any groups? And I was like, no. Are you hosting any groups? And I kept getting asked by different people. I'm like, I guess, yeah, because this is wanting to happen. And so I think it's powerful to look at what feedback you're getting in the world, in love and also in your career. And I mean, I could talk about this stuff forever, but obviously the parallels are just endless.
Oh, it's so true. And you know, you've brought me to a place, and I don't know that I've ever talked about this. People often ask me, you know, how did you make the switch from running a nonstick coding company to becoming a dating coach and an entrepreneur, right? And it was hard. The transition, I call them the dark years. I left my company, my family and I owned a business. Everybody else retired when we sold, and I wanted to stay on, and I loved it. And I wanted the experience of running a Fortune 100 company. And there were certain aspects I love, love, love. And what I didn't realize is when you're part of a corporate organization and you love what you do and you do a good job, they want to promote you. They're like, we'd like you to move to Nashville and run a bigger facility. And I knew something inside of me. I just knew, to your point, this isn't going to be my career. Right. I don't want to be. And they said, you could be the next blah, 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 female CEO of a multinational enterprise. And it just, that put me into fight or flight. Like thinking about that, I was like, that's not for me. I don't want that life. And now I had a one-year-old at home. So I left. I'm like, I want to do something different. I knew I wanted to set people up, but I didn't know how in the dating and matchmaking world. And I don't even know that I really knew that, because here's what I did. And you can laugh at this, because I made a list when I sat down, like, what do I want to be when I grow up? And I was young. And I said, okay, what are all the things that I love to do? And I made this long list of things, activities I love. I love drinking coffee in the morning. I love talking to my friends. I love helping them. I love connecting people. Blah, blah, blah. And then that long list, I made the next column was, what am I actually good at on this list, right? And that list got really small, really fast. And that's how I went from running a manufacturing company to doing work that fed my soul and was exactly who I am. What did I value? To Ashley's brilliant points earlier, what I didn't know was what I valued. Mm-hmm. I didn't know who I was. I was a pleaser. I am a performer. You put me in a situation, I will get A's. I will be your best employee. I am that person. So I never sat back to say, who am I? What right. do I love? What am I good at? Because we get caught in the frenzy of our dad saying, oh my gosh, I'm so proud of you because you got straight A's. Well, shit, I better get straight A's and I better get into a good school. And we get caught in that. And at some point the damn music stops and you're like, I'm not a show monkey. Who right. am I? And I tell people sometimes it's a hard tunnel to walk through, but it's so purposeful ultimately to say, who am I? How am I living my life? What am I good at? What could I do? What would give me joy to get out of bed and do every single day? And it comes naturally to me. And having these conversations about work and finding your purpose in work, I think, you know, one of the things I wanted to ask you is, for people that are listening to this, maybe you're, you know, maybe you're a 28-year-old and you hate your job. And maybe you're a 55-year-old and your kids are gone and you've stayed home with them and you feel like you're so young and you have purpose. What's a way that people can get started with finding their purpose?
I think the first order of business when you feel disconnected is just to get connected to yourself. So if you're in a place right now where you don't feel connected to what you're doing, instead of saying, what job do I need, or what job title should I be taking, or what business do I need to start? I think say, what are the things I need to do to make me feel like myself again? For me, I have a lot of good girlfriends. There's a couple in particular where for some reason, after I see them, I feel like myself again. Mm. I take dance classes. I love hip hop. Believe it or not, whenever people see me, they're like, you don't come across like you worked at the Pentagon and you don't come across like you like rap music, but I do. So dance classes, you too. That's amazing, Bella.
So much. So I used to have a hip hop instructor to teach my kids how to dance too. I think I was secretly living out my dance fantasies. So yes, people say you ran a Fortune 100 division. You know how to drive a forklift and you like rap, like sweary rap. I do. Yeah,
it's the best. It's the best. And like, there's other stuff. Like for example, I used to live in Los Angeles. Now I'm in New York, but I love the ocean. I used to put my feet in the water when I felt like I was just off, and it brought me back to me in a lot of ways. So my question for you is listening is, what is your ocean? You know, what do you need to come back to you? Start there. And then from that homeostasis, you can make better choices of what feels right and what doesn't.
Yeah. And there's so many parallels to job search and partner search. And think about the kind of partner that feels like home to you, that feels like that soft, cozy blanket. And even if, like Ashley, you value connection, sometimes that connection can lose us in the sizzle and the high highs and the low lows. What kind of long-term connection do you want? Who are the people in your life that make you happiest? What do they feel like? And start asking yourself the right questions to get you to live this life that you are in love with, a job that you love, a career, whatever it is. Maybe you want to volunteer, finding your purpose, but asking yourself, who am I? Do that soul searching work. And if it's about love, in the same way, evaluate, what have I been doing? What's not working? Where do I want to be? And start to have those conversations with yourself. And know the good news is, unlike 20 or 30 years ago, there were no Ashleys, there were no Bellas to help you to walk the paths that we have both walked. And now we hold other people's hands through this process. So reach out, let us know. You know, Ashley, if people want more information about you, where can they get more Ashley?
Oh my gosh, there's a whole lot of me going around right now. So my book is everywhere books are sold. It's called U-Turn, Get Unstuck, Discover Your Direction, Design Your Dream Career. It's bright yellow. You can't miss it. My podcast is also called the U-Turn Podcast, which you were on. I'm so happy you came on. It's Y-O-U, turn, two words. And I'm on Instagram at Ashley Stahl.
Oh my gosh, you guys. And I'm going to have links to Ashley's book in the show notes as well. So you can buy her book and see all things Ashley. Ashley, thank you so much for this really amazing conversation on purpose and, more importantly, how to define who we are and what we value. I had goosebumps numerous times at things that you said. So I know you've elevated me and taught me, and I know you've taught the listener the same. So big hugs to you. Thank you for being here. And like always, you guys, if you like this, leave us a review. Say the thing, give us a good star rating. There's no better gift than the gift of you listening to this and letting us know that you loved it. So, Ashley, thank you again, and we will see you next week. Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.